1984.
We're here with Russell Power.
Yep.
World War One is veteran.
The other side is my fingerprint state.
Oh,
that's made on the USS Oklahoma.
What's the 928-93?
Around that.
How? I'm thinking future 93. War in there, too. Mm-hmm.
That's really
good. So, why did you join the Army?
I didn't join the Army. I went to the Navy.
Okay. Why did you join the Navy?
What?
Why did you join the Navy?
Why? Because I weighed 175 pounds and I could get in as a fireman. They wouldn't pay them unless they were paid 175 a week.
Uh-huh. Were you a volunteer? Derby volunteer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I never waited to get back. War declared on the 16th. I was there on the 6th, and I was in on the 8th.
Okay. Where were you living at the time?
I'm living in Wichita, Kansas.
What do you remember about the outbreak of the war?
Operation what?
What do you remember of the outbreak?
Well, I remember that you might say we kind of expected it, but we didn't know when. So, that's the reason that they wanted to know over my buddies later years, why the hell I waited so long. I got from the 6th to the 8th to get in, see? But there were so many that were going through in them days that they didn't ask any questions or anything else. They didn't have any of it. We know if you lie or whatever.
How useful did you find your basic training when you were at the front?
I went to I got the training up at Jack Lake, up to Waukegan, Illinois. And I didn't go to the front, but I was on the transport duty. Mm-hmm. So I did haul troops back and forth, bringing back some of the crippled ones.
How did you get on with the French civilians?
It's fine. The roof is wonderful. The only thing is, since they're all foreigners, I couldn't speak to them in French.
Uh-huh.
But the girls say, we leave.
Do you remember any particular people or families that you can tell me about?
There was a family with the name of Richard. And they had a daughter with the name of Michelle. He wrote letters to me, and I'd have to get a buddy that could read French and write it to read it to me. Now, they were just nice people.
Uh-huh. How did you feel about the Germans?
How did I feel about them?
Yes.
Well, they were doing their job, what their boss was telling them to do.
Did you have any particular hatred or
No. We had a spy aboard ship. On our first trip, and us fellows would love to twist his neck, but they wouldn't allow us to do it, and then they turned him loose and he got over to France. He was signaling when we got over the war zone, he was down in the bunker down in the fire room, and he was signaling with a flashlight. When he got over the war zone, not that I knew any code or anything like that, he was just questioning the place I was going to be.
What was your attitude about your officers, your NCOs?
Some of them were wonderful, just like anything else. Some of them just wonderful. Some of them, by the golly, they didn't the door for the 3 hours of rain, but they got in and talked to
them. Do you remember any particular battles?
Oh, no names or anything like that. And we had a case by golly in the fire room where this 90-day officer came down by golly and he asked this co-passer what these different types were and what was revival they marked this way and so on and so forth. And of course, the steam pipes were marked red. And about 2 days later, he came down there on the Colleen. He didn't know it, but he went through the same wire. they asked if, what these were and so on. They didn't ask, I don't know what they are. Which is what I've read for. Which is, I just told you that day before yesterday. That's just a red hot pipe, that steam pipe. That's the only thing, of course, he got out of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we had another case where we had a leaky tube along the boiler. And they cut it out of the line so that it wasn't making any steam. It dropped, pulled the fire and everything on it. So steam got down about 50 pounds and the officer that day told our boiler maker, get in and roll the tube. And he looked up at the cage, and he looked at the officer and said, do you mean that? Wait, learn that, I mean, that's your job, isn't it? Yes, but he says, I won't go in there. Well, I'll have to put you up for mutinous conduct. Well, he says, I'll tell you what to do. I'll go in there if you'll go in. There's 50 pounds of steam on that. Because that doggone thing didn't happen to catch when I rolled the tube and cooked you right in there. So he said, well, that's all we heard of. So the boiler cooled down so that he could get in and do something. So that's just like that. He had others just like that, just normal. Others, by golly, and he'd get in and work with you and work for you or anything else. He'd help you out.
As a fighting soldier, what was your attitude towards the home front when you were in transit and did it change as the war progressed?
Well, the home front, they talk about home. Our folks were just trying every way in the world to save money and everything by cutting out on food and everything, sugar and stuff like that. And every day, we throw tons of good food over the side. I hope we didn't throw it over this time. We all threw it over at night because there was certain stuff that might float. And submarine, all they had to do was to figure how long it had been afloat and where we were ahead, see? So, that's what it was just to think that, by golly, our folks were going hungry and throw the darn stuff away. But the old sermon says it right, Lord hell, so go away.
What were your feelings about the streets of fighting?
A what?
The pot, the chaplain.
Oh, we had a wonderful chaplain. His name was Hopkins, but I don't know what nationality he was and everything else. You know, he's a heck of a good guy.
Uh-huh.
And,
did you have strong religious feelings?
I had what?
Strong religious feelings?
No. Yeah, I never knew who was religious. I knew it was time to die, I'd just die, that's all.
So the war didn't change the religion?
No.
What was your feeling during the war to industrial workers?
Well, I'm telling the truth, I never gave it a thought because we were in there doing what we were supposed to do and we figured that they should be doing the same thing, so we didn't, never thought anything about it.
How did you feel about conscientious objectors? Conscientious objectors?
Well, we thought they should be hung up by their necks for a while, by nice and think of our wonderful country here, and they have conscientious objectors, by guys, were allowed to live here, and they shouldn't have been. Should have strung them up.
What did you and your comrades briefly talk about during the war?
Now that would be an awful good question, because we talked about everything.
What were some of the main topics?
The main topic was that get the job done. That was the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
The DS fellows we went in, there were very, very few fellows that had any education, more than about a sixth and eighth grade education. About sixth grade was a limit. So there wasn't a lot of us that was very intelligent as far as learning is concerned. But I wouldn't trade my education that I got, little old country school, with some of these god darn college degrees that they're getting today. Because they don't teach them. They don't teach them anything like patriotism. They don't teach them anything like leaving other people stuff alone. Mind your own business. And nowadays they don't teach them that at all. They figure let them do as they please.
During the war, was there any particular thing you look forward to that was when you had treats? Something that you look forward to.
Well, that's what we all look forward to.
Tell me about your typical shore leave.
Oh, just typical shore leave. I had a girlfriend in White Plains, New York, and when I hit the beach, I sailed right up to the White Plains. She was working at a hotel up there that had been made from an old barn. Called Gedney Farms Hotel, and she was the cashier, and she had charge of the desk and stuff like that, magazines, candies, cigars, and cigarettes, and stuff like that. She had charge of that. And those days, they were it was pretty well. Visited by the movie stars, like the Moors and Al Jolson. Al Jolson was just can't even think of his name. He was the one that had the beautiful place down there. New York City, having lovely girls to dance to, stuff like that. Bill Rogers worked with them on that. Go Ziegfeld. Ziegfeld's father. And, well, Allison will give her some passes. For us, too, to go down and see. Or just go see. I got to go see some other ones that I've never been in there before. And we got about $24 a month. And you could spend an awful lot of it, but you could spend a little bit and get some good out of it. Transportation is very cheap, 10 days. You could pay a nickel right all day over New York and from the subway.
How did you feel about this place?
Discipline? Discipline? Oh, we had wonderful discipline. There was no trouble at all. Why, golly, because, as I said before, men by higher education had things that teach us patriotism. And another thing, if you worked for a man, you did what he told you to do. You didn't make up your own mind to do it to suit yourself. That's what he did. So. That's what we had. We had discipline. Oh, we didn't have any stuff. Oh, we'd have a case where some fellow would be rated. He would make a rating, and then he'd go to his head. He had to be busted. And then work back again. Back ahead. He behaved himself. He worked him. I love one of the name was Blackie. He was just a wonderful worker. Just swell. Worked like a darn mule, they were working rating. He's miserable, by gosh, they'd have to bust him back again. On the other phone, they were on. So that's natural. You'll find him anything. So.
What did you believe you were fighting for?
Yeah. We were fighting a war to end all wars. They had been fighting wars just even before Christ's time. But they were still fighting wars. They're still fighting wars.
thought that would be the end of it?
Well, that's what they told us. Actually, we took what they said.
What did you think of President Wilson?
We thought he was a stuck-up darn chump, what we thought, but he was still the president, and we got in and did what we had to do.
Was there any point in the war when your morale was particularly low or high? Your morale, your outlook on things during the war. Did you ever feel really good or really bad?
Well, I felt all right as far as I was concerned. And of course, I had no vision. We, as I say, we'd haul troops forward. We'd take about 70,000 troops to the load. We all had about the same attitude. It was just a job to get done, not at all.
What employment did you take up after the war?
Well, sir, I did everything. I got paid off right here in San Diego in 1928. And I did everything. It was very, very tight. We couldn't get a job hardly at all. I did a little job for a few days. We didn't get $100 a day in MBA. We were darn lucky if we got $5 a day. So,
at the end of the war, did you think it had been all worthwhile?
No war is worthwhile as far as that's concerned. Nobody wins in a war. The only thing it does is get rid of a lot of our cream of our crops, the service people and so on, because they don't take anything with young people. Because the young people, they didn't do things and stuff, for the older people back home, they're too darn contributing.
Did your life change as a result of the war?
Yes, quite a bit. I put in, we were torpedoed on the 5th of September 1918. And from April until the following May, I was in the hospital, hospitalized. And then I was asked for something to do. He sent me to Kansas City as recruiting duty. And I went there and just did a lot of jobs because my commander there in Kansas City said, "Dorothy, you lieutenant commander." His name was Richards. He was a hunk-up guy, but how he ever got into service, I don't know, because he was so nearsighted. He said to me, he said, "You're not much of an ornament to be put out here, by golly, get people into the service of the recruiting duty." So he said, "You just do whatever you do around here, fix the signs and stuff, and any odd jobs really, you know, do something, keep your business." So whenever a fellow would be turned in, they had jumped ship, and they had to send him back to Waukegan, Illinois, I would have to take it. Not always, but I would have to take him for once in a while. Take him up there as a prisoner, turn him in up there, and then come back to Kansas City. And after the war, of course, 1919, they were beginning to have this bunch of surplus stuff. So they let the old man know that they had a motorcycle that was being shipped from there. And they said, "Yeah, motorcycle and a sidecar." And I had to drive an automobile when I went to service. And of course, them days, there were not a lot of people who never knew what an automobile was, hardly. So when they came down there with their crates, so I went down and they crated it, put a little gas in it, and loaded it up to the recruiting station. And they'd send me on errands here, there, and forward and so forth. I would take the recruits to the evening. I would take the recruits and take them over three or four up on that old sidecar and that old motorcycle, take them down to the depot. And depot of those days is called the station now, railroad station. They take them down and put them on the train and send them up to Great Lakes for training.
Did somebody
like
the Purple Heart?
What's
that? I saw that you had a
yep.
Purple Heart. Tell me about that.
Well, that's all. We just torpedoed. I was burned over 60% of my body. And they said that in them days, if you run over to live, you got to do that. So, I was too damn honored to die, I guess. So I still kept on living. But I had a terrible keloid off the neck, off the arm, knees. My feet wasn't firm, but I had a pair of plump gloves that I worked with in the job, and this right-handed glove had a little hole in the right here of the finger. And when I took the glove off, my finger peeled right off with it. When I got up to the sick bay after pulling out the rental effort, I went to the sick bay and I took off my shirt, my back and my belly peeled right off with it. They gave me some citric acid in a wash pan and a rag to top myself with. There were lots of bugs that got in there on the car road before I did. See, I had to climb out. I was in the number 5 fire room, and the torpedo hit in 6, just right on the bulkhead. And that kept the torpedo from exploding inside the ship. It was exploding against the side instead of inside the ship. There was 36 fellows, those kiddos.
Tell me, as a person who's only seen battle scenes on the television, tell me what it's like when you pick up your big torpedoes.
Well, I just think of how they take them from and how they can imitate them so that they look down near real. So it don't bother me anymore now, but used to, I couldn't stand to see those things. And it pulled me all out of gear. And they can imitate them so that it looks almost real. Yeah, but I like to speak about and report about. I never smoked, I never drank. And when I was in the hospital in France, after we were torpedoed, we had 19 boilers aboard, and 9 of them were put out of commission. They were underwater. So the other 10 boilers, yeah, all the fellows that could have been firemen in these other 9 boilers that wasn't filled, went forward and helped to fire the 10 boilers. And he took her back to port under her own steam, so he could run foul. And the lights all went out and everything. When the fire, when the torpedo hit, they had to run cable along the top side and down through the manhole, down through the fire room, dim light. Up until that time, the boys all worked by just the light and then the fire scene. But they couldn't see the water in the gate, the water gate. So the guy was sent up there with a shovel full of live coal, and he held the shovel there until the coal died down. To watch, then he did another shovel full of coal, live coal, by the firebox, so that they could read the water glass and see how much until they got the electricity down. See how much water they had. So those are the boys that did the work, believe me. We were torpedoed 8 o'clock in the morning. And they were out about 300 miles out at sea. And they turned me around out at sea. Took her back in, but about midnight they got into Brest, France. And when they got into Brest, they run it in onto the mud flat, so it wouldn't sink anymore. It would sink at the rate of an inch an hour. The size of the hole it made in there, it was just about the size of the end of the trailer. So there's a lot of water that was going in there, see. And they couldn't get pumped or anything to keep that out, you see. But they did have all watertight doors and everything like that closed. They put a, what they call a collision mat over the side down on full of concrete, because they were supposed to be empty coming back, so that the overload, and they put that big pack on the side of the ship. So, excuse me.